how I came to laughter. It was 2012, and one more person said, "Ew, worms in the house," about my worm business. And I was like, that day, I'd heard it hundreds of times in the previous 10 years. Hundreds. I should have kept track. And I wasn't paying attention. You know, they say to listen to what your clients want. I was like, no, you need this. People don't buy what they need. They buy what they want. And they definitely didn't want what I was flogging.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Space Tomatoes podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Havoc.
I'm the other guy, LX. How you doing? Welcome back. All those things.
And today we have a special guest with us, Kathy Nesbitt, who is a health and wellness advocate and founder of Kathy's Crawley Composters, Kathy's Sprouters, and Kathy's Laughter Club. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I was muted and then I'm like, how do I mute? Unmute.
Well, awesome. So what got you into vermicomposting?
Oh, we're jumping right in. Okay.
Well, why not?
Yeah, why not, right? Well, it's the 24th anniversary of Kathy's Crawley Composter, selling worms by the pound for indoor composting. I know. Wow. Can you imagine? Whew. Crazy. So I'm located in Canada, just north of Toronto, largest city in Canada. Mm-hmm. And in 2002, the landfill for Toronto closed. It filled up, the landfill filled. And
wow.
Right? Wow.
That's a lot of stuff.
That's a lot of garbage. Yes, indeed. And we didn't have a place to send our garbage. So, because nobody wants a new landfill in their backyard, right? NIMBY.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not in my backyard.
Exactly.
And so we started to export our garbage to the U.S. Almost 1,000 trucks a week were making the way from the greater Toronto area to Michigan. That's a lot of traffic. That's a lot of garbage and a big waste. And I was like, oh my gosh, who are we exporting our garbage out of the country? And I had a solution, indoor composting with worms. And it really had nothing to do with the environment, although I guess it kind of did. I really wanted people to be aware of a way that they could manage their waste and create something wonderful, which is black gold, that the worm poop is black gold.
Mm.
So I set forth. I don't have an entrepreneur background. I came from an employee background, like work hard, and in 30 years you get a gold watch. Why do you need a watch when you retire? I don't know.
Right. Probably gold plated these days.
No, right. There are no watches anymore nowadays. It's just a piece of Lexan. It's like, here you go.
So I would have a table wherever I could, educating people. And I heard many times, ooh, worms in the house. And I was like, no, you need this. I wasn't paying attention. You know, for entrepreneurs, it's like the 80-20 rule. 20% of your clients will give you 80% of your revenue. Not with worms, because they reproduce more than rabbits. And so I don't have repeat customers. 24 years, can you imagine?
Oh.
Wow, someone should get a prize. me.
I agree.
And don't give these big corporations any ideas. They'll genetically modify worms that'll die off after like one life cycle or two, and they'll try to sell us those kind of worms, I'm sure.
True enough, yeah, you're right. Okay, you know, I take that back.
You're not supposed to say that out loud, okay? We are recording here. They're going to hear it now.
We didn't say which corporation.
That's true.
All of them. So I started to do school workshops, and over 100,000 students have seen my presentation in 24 years.
That is amazing.
That's impressive.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so beautiful. I have to say, you know, we're making an impact every day. If we smile at someone or we hold the door, we don't, or whatever it is, we're making an impact. We don't always know. And I've had the privilege, because I've been doing this for 20 years, over 20 years, I've met people that I was in their grade 3 class, and then they see me exhibiting at a farmer's market or a show or something. And they'll come up and they'll go, oh, Kathy, you came into my grade three class. And because of you, I became an environmental lawyer.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
Like, because having worms in the class and seeing the benefit of the worms. So they might have said because we had worms in the class, not, maybe not because of me, but it is because of me.
Well, I mean, there's, I think there's a huge, this is something that I think is amazing, right? And we should be doing more of this, right? There's plenty of time for, you know, in school in general, to introduce people to things like composting in general, you know, and
useful things.
Yes, absolutely. Right. And even people that live in an apartment, right. I always tell people grow something and they're like, well, I live in an apartment. Okay. 5-gallon bucket, drill some holes in the bottom of it, fill it with soil and plant a tomato plant. It will grow wonderfully in a 5-gallon bucket. Just make sure you're using food grade if you can, you know, but still you can grow your own tomatoes and you can then create your own compost in a small compost bin, which you can use for the feeding of that plant. So you're introducing people into this system of regenerative, you know, food.
And sustainability and self-governance.
Yeah.
Right? There's no food shortage. Right. We're sold down the river, and I know it's not that kind of show, but we really are told, like, that we should spray the weeds when we could just eat them.
Right. No, absolutely. And that is a road we can absolutely go down. I'm happy to go down that road because, you know,
we are that kind of show.
That is the show, right? We very much are in tune with that. Yeah, people, you know, picking dandelions out of their lawn and spraying weed killer. And what they don't understand is the dandelion is one of the most nutrient dense plants you can find anywhere. It self-propagates and you can use it medicinally as well, right? And people just completely miss this. So yeah, this is absolutely in line with everything we do.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. So that's what I like to help people understand is, you know, because they go, oh, ew, worms. And that's their first response. If you're afraid of something or you find something creepy or icky, you're not doing research to find out more about it. Like, you're just shutting off. I keep listening if you're afraid of worms. yeah, so doing the school workshops, when I started going into schools, I was like, okay, now I just have to wait 20 years for the kids to have buying power. Yay, I made it. Be careful what you say.
you're also introducing them to something that I think is largely lost in society. We don't teach people how to, you know, you're taught from an early age that scraps, waste goes in a garbage can. Why? It's all very beneficial. You can compost. You don't need a lot of area. And if you have a vermicompost set up, you need less area. Believe it or not, those things chew through garbage like nobody's business. Right?
Right. Yeah, it's so beautiful. I think for me, the beautiful part, or one of them, is being close to Toronto, 6 million people in the greater Toronto area. So it's Condoville. It's a concrete jungle. There's very little green space. Many of these children, you know, we have a big immigrant population. And I think, like, some of these children have never even seen a worm, never mind held one. So when it comes time, when I go into the schools, hopefully the class is getting a worm bin for the school. And then they can see, the students get to see a worm bin from start, set up to harvest. And the grand finale of my workshops is, after the children have set up the worm bin, holding the worms and adding them into the system. And that piece is so impactful. You know, they're shaking, they're holding their hands, and they don't know what's going to happen. And I say, they don't have teeth, they can't bite us, they might just poop on you, but it's good luck, it's fine. And it gets loud. You know, there's squealing, people not running around, because I do insist that they stay seated, not run around. If they're squealing, well, that's fine. But I say, after the worm bin is set up, oh, and just so you know, worms don't like noise. You're welcome, teachers. and it's so
sneaky.
Beautiful. Yeah, sneaky, right? And sometimes teachers will see me at at a show and they'll say, oh, what a great idea. Ooh, I'm afraid of worms. What do? I say, here's what you do. You have me come in, do a workshop. We set up the worm bin. You tell the students how ridiculous your fear of worms is.
Yeah.
And then you let them manage the worm bin because they want to.
So what variety of worm are you using?
I've got red wiggler worms and European nightcrawlers. There are four. There are thousands of types of worms. Only four have been identified for vermicomposting, and that's the red wiggler, European nightcrawler, African nightcrawler, and Peryonyx, which is a tropical worm.
Okay.
There probably are others.
Yeah, I think in pretty much everywhere I've looked, it seems to mostly gravitate towards the red wigglers.
They have the best marketing campaign.
They probably do.
They got good PR people for them, working for them.
Would you like to see my family photo? I know for the people listening, you won't be able to see, but here we go.
Oh, nice.
That's a picture of a pound of red wiggler worms. Look, it's right in front of my face. It's my face.
Wow.
No, that's 800 to 1,000 worms in a pound. And each one has 5 hearts. And when I learned that, I said, wow. So when I go into schools, you know, it doesn't matter what the grade is. I say, I ask them how many hearts a worm has or what do they think? And then we get to 5. And then I say, anyone good at math? And, you know, a few hands go up and I say, let's see. And then I ask them, like, even if it's grade 1 or grade 2, they haven't done multiplication yet. It doesn't matter. I still ask them all these questions. So I say, how many? So I have a question. If each worm has 5 hearts, how many hearts in a pound of worms? And I've said that there's 1,000 worms in a pound. And it's just so wonderful. There's so many ways to incorporate the worms into the learning. Math and English and poetry, like writing songs, drama. It's endless what can be learned. And some teachers have reported having a worm bin in the classroom, some of the students will eat better. You know, they'll be eating their cheese strings or whatever, chips or whatever. And they go, oh, Mrs. Brown, I want to feed the worms. And hopefully the good teacher will say, oh, thank you for wanting to feed the worms and your interest. Worms don't eat that. If you want to feed the worms, you have to bring in a healthy snack. So then they bring in an apple and they go, okay, I brought in an apple. I want to feed the worms. And they go, oh, good. Now you got to eat the apple. They just want the scraps.
Yep. That is awesome.
I think my third grade mind might be thinking, I don't know. I just can't get it. Can you eat worms? Is that a thing? Like I know I've seen it on like those game shows where they dare people and, you know, dangle money in front of them to eat that kind of stuff. I'm just curious.
I would imagine, you know, they're pure protein. They probably taste awful. Like if you've ever gone fishing and the green goo coming out of the worm, that I'm sure that's probably bitter, so that they taste awful for the birds or the fish, whoever's eating them. So that's when they get stressed, they secrete that green goo. I would imagine that they are edible. I don't know anybody actually, that's not true. You know, I was at a workshop and it's so fun what happens. I did a whole school in a small town from kindergarten to grade 7. The last one was the 6-7 grade. And two guys walked in and they're like, they looked at me and they said, we're going to eat a worm. And I said, okay, good. And so it came to the end of the session, set up the worm bin, time to add the worms in. Now, we added 8 pounds of worms in that school. There was 8 worm bins. And so one of the boys had disappeared. I don't know where he went. He was hiding somewhere. And the other one was there. So he's holding up the worm, like you know, asking me, hey, can I? And I said, just ask your teacher. I said, it's fine. Just know they grow in manure. You know, trying his last-ditch effort to save the worm. So he asked the teacher. Now, it was a male teacher. I don't know if it was a female teacher, what the response would have been. But he says to the teacher, can I eat it? And he said, go ahead, Owen. So the kids were chanting. It was like a Disney movie. They were like, eat it, eat it, eat it. And I was so engaged. I wanted to chant too. I was having so much fun. The teacher was sick of Owen having all this attention. So he said, Owen, you have 10 seconds to eat the worm. So he's eat it, 10, 9, eat it, 7, 6, eat it. And then Owen pops it in his mouth. He had no choice. The green goo is coming out. I mean, Owen, sorry for you. He pops it in his mouth. Then the chant goes from eat it to swallow it, swallow it. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the best day ever.
Wow.
Owen had no choice. He couldn't spit it out. He had to swallow that worm. So he did. At the end of my session, I say to the students, oh, you know, I hope you enjoyed this. Let your parents know how fun it is. I look at Owen. I'm like, Owen, I don't want to hear from your parents. And I hope your belly's okay.
Right. Yeah.
Owen got himself in that situation himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So which was a great gift for me because there's a movie, How to Eat Fried Worms. And because of that movie, children often, or I think it's a book too, will often say, oh, I'll eat a worm, or something about eating a worm. So now I say, that's been done already. That's been done in one of my workshops. No need to repeat that one. Another one, like I have so many wonderful stories because it's so fun. I was at a Catholic school, and I don't know if it matters, but there I was at a Catholic school. I was there 2 days. So the second day I go in, again, the last workshop on the first day was the 7/8, the older kids. When I went in the next day, the principal came in and said, about half a dozen of the boys from yesterday's session will be joining you and they will be apologizing. I was like, oh? And he said, yeah, after your session, they went to wash their hands. They took some worms with them. I mean, it's not funny, but it's funny. And then they tried to get them to stick on the ceiling in the bathroom, like spaghetti.
Oh, no.
And they got caught by the principal.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, how wonderful. Yeah, I mean, I'm laughing because it's funny. And then people go, well, that's how it starts. You know, you abuse the worms and then you're on to cats. And then it's like, well, okay, but I'm not sure that
I don't think there's a correlation there. I think
right?
You could chalk that up to kids being kids, I would say.
I think so too, right? I just thought it was hilarious. I had to do my best when they came to apologize. To not burst out laughing. I was just like, I had to be like, oh, like like as if I was, you know, offended that they took my children and were trying to stick them on the roof.
When you put it like that.
Yeah, right? Oh my goodness.
So fun. Okay.
Well, that sounds like a really fun time. So how long have you been working? Yeah, I guess 20 plus years now with different schools, and are they all very local to you? Have you done travel to go to other school districts?
You know, you're never, or I shouldn't say never, but it takes a long time for you to become appreciated in your own town. So I travel a lot. Okay. There's one school in my town. I mean, there's several schools, but there's one that has me come in every year. But other than that, it took a lot of time, a long time before even my own town had me in. And okay. I've had media. I mean, I've had so much attention about this. So to answer your question, I travel far and wide.
Awesome. So what would be the most interesting travel to a school and presentation you gave?
Well, I'm located in Ontario. I was a school in Quebec in another province, got funding, and my husband and I traveled to Quebec, stayed overnight. This was all paid by the school. And then they wrote a book, and I got to write the foreword for the book about their worm project. Nice. So that was pretty cool.
That is really cool.
That is pretty cool.
And yeah. Toronto is an interesting city, that's for sure. I've been there for business travel a few times, and I will say this: the Habba Trail is insane. Like there's an entire underground city that exists in Toronto, so that when it's cold, you don't have to go above ground. Right? You can like from my hotel, I could go downstairs and be in this little Habba Trail and walk to, you know, a lot of places. And I guess there's trains as well down there, and I didn't get to experience that, but I thought that was quite a lovely experience, to be honest. I think the only issue I had is there is a very large church, and it's right there. I think it's the government building, and they have the big square there with a really nice space, right? Fountains and everything else. But my hotel was directly overlooking that. My window was, and there was a church bell that went off, every hour, every hour, all of the hours, all of them.
God is watching.
Is it called the Habit Trail, or is that just a describer that you've used for it?
That was just my descriptor.
It's called the Path. Oh, okay. It's called the Path.
All right.
And it is, it's really cool. I mean, it's, the whole thing's tiled up. It's cool. And there's vendors in there and stuff, or there were when I was there. I don't know if that's, you know, how that works, but it was really neat.
Yeah. 2020 changed a lot down there, you know, with people not working, like that's really Commuterville downtown Toronto is, I don't think anyone really lives down there. Most people are commuters. Yeah. So it was really empty, and the Path was, a lot of those stores are no longer.
Well, people had more time to stay home with their worms, right?
There you go.
Talking about that, 2020 was our best year ever. And we actually ran out of worms, right? Because the schools were closed. So parents were calling saying, oh, we're looking for a project for the kids. Like, what do I care as a businesswoman, how the worms get in the house? And then we ran out of worms, and people would be so excited. Oh, I've been waiting 5 years to do this, da, da, da. I'd let them tell their whole story and be all excited about getting started with worms. And then I'd have to break the news. I'm sorry, I don't have any worms. And then they'd get mad. What do you mean? Why don't you have worms? Well, there's this thing going on in the world. Everyone's shut, and you know, supply chain, all the things. And so they were mad. And I'm like, well, you know, 5 years ago, I was waiting for you.
Yeah.
Mm, right.
Yeah, I actually... I
not to be rude, but I can't help it.
I'm one of the admins for a group that has a number of chats for self-sufficiency, gardening, birds, livestock, communications, arts and crafts, you know, things, just making stuff and being self-sufficient, right? And it was amazing when that came along, the uptick that we saw. And it has declined, but not as much as it ticked up, which I think is an amazing thing. And I hopefully you've seen the same thing in your business as well. And there was probably a big uptick, and like you said, you couldn't supply the worms, but you know, hopefully that uptick has also continued for you.
It has indeed. You know, people don't always want to do the whole system. They want to jump to the end product. So people want the black gold, the worm poop. Right. They absolutely want that. They don't necessarily want worms in the house. And it's really funny. People come to my place to pick up the worms. And a guy came and he's like, I've been following you for years. But my wife wouldn't let me have worms. So anyway, she's gone. So I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I thought she was like, no, she didn't die. I was like, oh, okay. So he's going to, I said, that's interesting. And so as we were talking, I said, you know, it's interesting because I think I keep on wanting to start a dating site. Like, hey, you got worms, I got worms. Because it's not gender. Like it's not women don't like worms and men do, or vice. It's mixed. It's both. Sometimes it's men that are standing at the one with their hand on the door handle waiting to get out. And the wife is like, yay, I can't wait to use the compost. So I said, oh, I want to start a dating site. And then I said, oh, you know, I also have European night crawlers. And he's like, no, I just want red wigglers. I'm like, oh, another branch to my website. Like, oh, I'm exclusive. Are you exclusive? Just reds? Or you want to?
Awesome.
You talk about the black gold, which is actually literally true, because if anybody hasn't bought worm castings before, they're kind of expensive. So yeah. I'm sure it's a lot more cost effective to get your own. And if you said they multiply that much, maybe we should get into a... My wife really loves gardening. So yeah, that would be a great idea. How would you get started in something like that? Maybe you could run us through like a quick setup.
Absolutely. So for the do-it-yourselfers, your audience, a Rubbermaid bin or some kind of tote is perfect.
Okay.
Then it's portable. Then you can kind of move it around. You need a carbon-nitrogen mix. So the carbon that I use is shredded paper. It could be leaves, straw, cardboard, drink trays, egg cartons, any combination of those browns. And then the nitrogen is your food scraps, coffee grounds, tea bags. Manures are beautiful. So if you're doing it outside, I wouldn't suggest bringing in cow manure or whatever into your kitchen. But, you know, if you have a – well, you're in Florida, right? Are you in Florida?
Yeah, we're in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in
Havoc's in North Carolina. I'm in Florida. We do have chickens. Could we use those, or is that too hot for them?
Chicken manure is too hot. That's too high in ammonia. You can use some of that. I would just be careful with chicken manure because it's really hot. It's really
potent. I can load you up with some horse manure if you want, and goat manure.
Okay.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. Any of the vegetarian animals, so horses, cows, goats, sheep, guinea pigs, rabbits.
Alpacas.
Right? And rabbits are really wonderful. If anybody's got rabbits, some worm people have their worm bin right under the hutch. So the poop, the urine, the shavings fall right into the worm bin. It's just this like lovely recycling system. And nothing to be done. Then you just take out again the black gold, or take out some of the worms. And
Epic and I both know some rabbit people. They're you know, rabbit people are a little weird. I don't know, but maybe worm people give them a run for their money.
I would say that we're a little bit weirder because you know our product isn't quite as cute as rabbits.
That's a matter.
I know their food.
I think they're cute. We just filled up a bunch of beds yesterday, and you know, so I got to play with some worms. And discard some grubs, but mostly I had to play with the worms. Make sure.
So in North Carolina, you have the largest, maybe the only worm conference, international worm conference every year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in North Carolina.
Where is that?
Is it Raleigh? Is that where the university is?
Yep. Well, we have several of them, but that's one.
Yeah. So I believe it's at the University of. I thought it was North Carolina, University of North Carolina. Is that?
UNC, yep. Okay.
Yeah, it's there. And it's been going for over 20 years. I spoke there a couple of times in the early 2000s.
I'll have to check that out.
When I started going, there was like 30 people. And when I went maybe 6 years in, it had tripled to 90 people. And I was like, wow, here we are, the international experts.
Yeah,
very cool. And Florida, I used to get my worms from Florida. So Florida, Texas, California, Georgia are the large worm growers in the States.
Yeah, we have a lot.
Do you run into any kind of problems with like the heat in Florida? Cause it does get hot. Like if you leave them outside or in the cold, maybe up where you are, or is that ever a problem?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The worms are temperature sensitive. That's why it's perfect for everywhere. Winter in Canada, too cold. Heat in Texas, Florida, whatever, too hot. So having them inside is perfect. Like people go, what about rodents and raccoons? It's like, well, if you've got those in your house, you've got a bigger problem than the worms. And not to laugh at people's like rodent problems, but you know, same with cottage country. If people are afraid of bears, you might not want to have a composter outside to attract bears to your yard. Sure. So if they're in the house, no problemo.
All right. Yeah. How about overpopulation in the container that they're in? Is that ever become a problem?
Never. Okay. And here's why. The worms have a built-in mechanism. They will regulate their population based on available space and available food. So as long as they have enough room, they're going to keep on reproducing. If they start running out of space or out of food, they stop. Not that they stop reproducing, because, you know, I think that's part of the process, but the adults die off to make room for the babies. So at a certain point, you would have a lot of worms like, whoa, look at all the worms we have. So you could take some out, set up another bin so you can expand your system. And that's what I say to people. You know, I get the question, like, how many worms do we need? We're a family of four. I ask them a few questions because it's not about number of people. It's lifestyle. Are you vegetarian or vegan? Do you prepare your food from scratch or buy, you know, even if you're vegetarian or vegan, you can buy prepared meals eating in restaurants. So if you're doing those activities, you're not producing the food. So if somebody wanted to manage all of their organic matter, I would say to weigh your waste for a week or two and see how much organic matter that can go in the worm bin you have. And then the worms eat half their weight once they're established. So you can kind of do the math. So if you had a pound of worms, half a pound of food waste per week, 3 to 4 pounds per week, which is really substantial.
Yeah.
And then some people will go, wow, we create way more than that. Okay, well, good. So you can still start with a pound. In three or four months, you're going to double your population. You can expand your system, double the input, and so on and so on. You can start with the amount of worms that you need. But if you're new to this, you know, if something goes wrong, it goes wrong fast. Your worms may die off, and that they're expensive worms. They're in Canada, we're selling them for $100 a pound, but that's Canadian. Okay. So like $50.
is the exchange rate that bad?
Not quite. It just feels like it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, my neighbor actually has a bin set up, and I've gone back and forth with doing this, and here's why. I do want to do it, I think. But the problem that I have is there are months at a time where what we have for food waste, what we call greens, is exceedingly high because of the fact that we grow a lot of food. And we have livestock, right? We have chickens, turkeys, geese, goats, horses. So, you know, we have big compost piles already. But the thing that most interests me is what he brings to me, like about once a month during the summer months, is the liquid. And that right there, you know, he'll give me a gallon jug full of worm compost tea, essentially, right? And that right there I can turn into 10 gallons of material that I can go and spray onto our soil, right? Which is excellent. I mean, it's amazing stuff. So I guess my question is, what do you think the feasibility of a bin with, say, I don't know, 20 pounds of worms is? And what would that look like?
Size-wise?
Yeah.
So the guideline is a pound of worms per square foot of surface. You would never start with the maximum, right? You would want to have more space than you have worms to allow them to grow. Rather than depth, you want surface area because they're surface feeders.
Okay.
So like, you don't need a really deep container or system. You know, there are lots of ways to do this. For the heat and the cold, you can have them in ground. When I started my worm business, I had an article in BioCycle, the compost recycling magazine in the States. And because of that article, I was contacted by a school in Michigan, in Lansing, doing vermicomposting. And they had me come down. So I went to visit them, which was so fun. And they had at their schools, because Michigan has similar climate to where I'm living, they had worm bins. Some were like kind of 3 feet into the ground, so they're kind of not below the frost line, but they're protected from the cold, and then they would be insulated with styrofoam or different ways. And others were on top, so like a box that again was insulated. And yeah, it's quite amazing what people can do to grow the worms outside if they don't have indoor space or you create more than.
I wonder if anyone's ever tried, because now my brain's working. I'm thinking, what if I just had like a couple, like maybe six of the 1 pound worm bin type setups and put them directly into the soil in our high tunnel and just allowed that to leach into the high tunnel?
Yeah. Yeah, that could work. I had the opportunity to go to Guatemala to work with worms. And in Guatemala, they had like PVC pipe that had holes in it. And then those were shoved into the ground, like three feet down, holes throughout. Their food scraps go in the top of the tube. The worms are in there. And then the worms come and go, but they come back because that's where the food is.
Mm.
But they go out and they're fertilizing all around, do-do-do-do-do, and then they move that tube, gets moved around the garden.
See, I'm spinning right now. I'm like, hey, wait a second here. That's doable.
Yeah.
So when the worms go underground, how far do they actually go down typically?
These worms, again, are surface dwellers, so they really don't go down very far.
They don't?
No.
Okay.
They're not like the dew worms that live below the frost line.
All right. So when it rains, they come up? Is that the kind we're talking about? So they breathe air, right? They have to come up for air?
Correct, yes.
So when it rains, is that why you see them on the surface?
Correct. Okay. A few reasons, yes. They can't swim. They come up to escape from the rising water. And it's easier to mate on a flat surface.
Oh, okay.
Oh. So they actually surface to mate as well?
Not strictly. But, you know, they come out because it's not sunny, so they can come out and be free from the getting sunburned and dying.
Okay.
I can understand all those reasons. I find those true myself.
Well, that is pretty amazing stuff. So what is it? So I guess, what is it that makes these specific types of worms different from, say, just your standard garden variety earthworm?
You want to know the big secret? They're small. They're too small to fit on a hook.
Oh, okay.
So they get to survive. Although people use them for trout and salmon fishing, like for stream fishing. It's their voracious appetite. So the night crawler, the dew worm that lives in the grass, or in the earth, it only eats carbon. It's not a composting worm at all. It won't eat nitrogen. So they're not. So they're really not composting worms. They're the plows of the soil. They're turning the soil, and they're also eating carbon, not nitrogen.
Right. Right. Okay. That's interesting. And there's, you said four varieties that are known to be composting worms.
Correct.
So would that cover? Obviously, you've got, you know, subarctic. You're in subarctic conditions, but you've got Arctic as well as, you know, like Saharan desert style conditions, where I imagine it's probably unlikely to be that fruitful. But outside of that, you're pretty much globally something that anyone can do.
Absolutely. And you know, everybody eats. I think that composting and worm composting is something we can all do just for the planet, for sustainability, just to be, you know, better stewards of the earth, because we're all eating. And if we call it garbage, it is.
Yeah.
You know, when I go into schools, when I'm saying, okay, so you start like this, I have the worm bin with the bedding and stuff. And then I say that in 3 to 5 months, they'll convert this to this. And I hold up a bin of worm poo. And then I dip my hands and I'm like, oh, look at worm poo. So almost pure worm poo. And my goal is for somebody to say, or several somebodies to go, ew, poo. Because then that's my trigger to go, oh, thank you, yes. English is so interesting. If we call this poo, then, oh, ew, gross. We should just flush it away. Gross. But if we call this black gold that it is, and we go, oh, this is precious. I want to hold on to this. This is valuable. Right. And that's the same with, like, if we think about words that get used, that get flung around, it's like, oh, if we change that word to this, it just changes the whole feeling. And that's how it is with worm compost. I mean, it's, and then I ask them, hey, do you like eating fruits and vegetables? Because they grew in worm poo.
Right.
That's, I think, and that's true with, I would say, pretty much, you know, non-carnivorous animals and slightly as well the omnivores. But anytime you get into a herbivore type of an animal, the poo is not, at least to me, it's not disgusting. It's that's what I'm going to eat from. I mean, literally, you know, and it's
havoc eat from poo.
I do. I mean, you know, and if you think about it, right, that at the end of the day, we're taking, you know, chicken manure, you know, goat, horse, and, you know, as well as green scraps and waste, and we're just putting them in a pile. And then we are going to use that, and our plants are going to take in all of that nutrition and then they're going to produce fruit for us to eat. So at the end of the day, yeah, I guess I am eating the poop.
Well, I also have a sprouting business, and so sometimes I'll have sprouts and they've either gone funky or whatever, and whatever happens, I put them in my worm bin, and because it's such beautiful soil, it starts to grow. So the sprouts come back to life. And then like sometimes people get so grossed out, I'll be at a show and I'll be showing, oh, look, oh, here's a lentil sprout. And then I'll just pull it out, like shake it off and
eat it.
Pop it in. It's like getting my peck of dirt at the same time.
It almost seems like you could.
I tried sprouting once.
Oh, yeah?
It didn't work out so well for me. Yeah, they kind of got moldy and didn't work out for me. I think it's too humid in Florida, like outside. And inside, I don't remember what the problem was. And then I tried them in a mason jar once, and that didn't work either.
Well, sprouting is really wonderful. Sprouts, again, back to kind of the issue of non-food, like shortage. Sprouts are just seeds or beans germinated, either hydroponically or in soil. I use a hydroponic system with water. And they germinate in a day or two. So it's really fast, and it's really something that, I'm sorry that you had trouble. I would say try again. And
I'm sure it was me. I would love to try it again. Yeah. And now that we have an expert here, that probably might help a little bit more.
Yeah, I would say try again, because sometimes what happens if you're using a jar, you know, the seeds are so small. So you put the seeds in, you go like, oh, that's not very many seeds. So you might toss some more seeds in. And then when the seeds start to grow, there's not enough room. So the ones on the center might start rotting because there's not enough oxygen getting in there. Or the opposite, there's too much water because you need to drain it off. And sometimes there's a little lip in the jar and the water sits there. And that's where the bacteria grows. So
I see.
Possibly. I don't know what you were doing, but that's, I would say start again, because sprouts are incredible. The system that I have, it's like food grade plastic, like a little dome, stainless steel mesh. And I met the gentleman that designed that in 2002 at my very first event exhibiting the worms. It was a garden event, and that thing, it looks like a spaceship. It was flying off the shelf. And so when there was a break in the audience, I went to this man and I said, what is that thing? And why are people buying that and not my worms? So he was, he's 97 this year. He was 72, professional ballroom dancer. So tall, lean body, white crisp shirt, black vest, a gentleman. And so he told me all about sprouts. And okay, so I was like, wow, 72, still working. I came from an employee background. I didn't know anyone that still worked at 72. So I was impressed with that. And having been a vendor, I know how hard it is setting up and stuff. I'm like, wow, look at that guy, 72. Just, wow, look at him go. It's 10 years. So he told me all about sprouts. I said, okay, I'm in. So he said, if you're going to do this, start your day. It's mung beans that we're eating, which are the bean sprouts from Chinese food. So those are the ones that I eat every day, 24 years. I don't go a day without sprouts. It really is my health plan. And so here's some of the things about sprouts. They're hydrating, alkalizing, regenerative, biogenic, and contain up to 100 times more digestive enzymes than raw vegetables. As soon as we cook them, no more enzymes. Still fiber, protein, minerals, like lots of goodness. So I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to do this. So I started to do that. And I would see Tony at different events, and people thought that I was a plant, because whenever there was someone at his booth, like, oh, you should buy one of those. It's really great. Plant sprout. Thank you for laughing. And in 2012, he said, hey, why don't you sell the sprouter and beans with your worm business? I was like, oh my gosh, why didn't I think of that? That's a great idea. It's got to be easier to sell than worms. But only marginally, because we're so gullible. It's got to be 20 years ago now, there was an article on the front page of the Toronto Star, largest paper in Canada, that said sprouts are toxic.
Oh, geez.
So I see people at these shows and they're like, oh, I heard sprouts are toxic. I hold up my bag of seeds and I'm like, if sprouts are toxic, we're doomed. Food comes from here. except the animals. But the, you know, the plant all comes from seeds. So if we're, and they start in sprout form. So the sprout goes to food. So if sprouts are toxic, all our food is toxic, which our manufactured stuff probably is.
Most likely.
Right, but yeah. Who funded that article is would be my question.
Right, but what they were talking about, see, I think the problem with us is that we're lazy people. We don't read the whole thing. We just like read the headline. We go, oh my gosh, what? I'm never eating sprouts again. So what they were talking about is the bags of sprouted mung beans, like bean sprouts that come from China, already sprouted. Yeah, right. Sure, they're toxic. They're sprayed with something. Like it takes a day or two to grow. How? Like it took them 3 weeks to get from China.
Yeah, exactly. How are you getting a sprout into a bag and staying, you know, moderately, reasonably fresh through its multi-week journey? You can't, right? I mean, they go from good to not so good pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly, yeah. And even if we buy them sprouted at the store, not the ones from China, even from a local supplier, if they grow in a day or two, then it takes a day or two to get to the store. Mm-hmm. Once you buy them, you get them home, your alfalfa sprouts or your broccoli sprouts, they might be a little bit slimy or they might smell a little bit funky. And if they do, that's the bad bacteria. You want to get rid of those.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Right? Because we're sprouting for our health.
Yeah, exactly. And this just goes back to, you know, something we've said multiple times, right? The closer you can get to your food source, the better you're going to be, period.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean like next to the Frito-Lay's plantation. Or plant, not plantation.
Right. Yes.
But yeah. And so, you know, sprouting something like, you know, was mentioned previously, you can do on your countertop in a mason jar, right? So you don't, this isn't like, you know, crazy involved stuff. A little water, some seeds, a couple of days.
Sprouts. Yeah, and the seeds, you know, if you buy, or I would suggest buying organic seeds, the price in seed form to conventional, it's nominal. It's like pennies.
Yeah.
We don't have pennies anymore, but if we did.
Especially if you buy them in bulk, right? That's another thing, right? If you're buying packets of seeds, they're very expensive. Or they can be. Not always, but mostly they are. But if you buy, you know, 1,000 seeds, all of a sudden you'll notice that you're getting them for far less money. And I would agree. Organic and definitely non-GMO. That's my take on that. Please don't eat that garbage.
Well, last year we let our broccoli plants after we harvested them, and we just let them go, and they bolted, and we got a ton of seeds off of them. So that's what I think I tried to use. So I'm going to try it again, and hopefully I'll get better results.
Yeah, I would get sprouting seeds.
They're different then.
Well, you may have more success if you're using them for sprouting.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Mung bean being one of the most common and just super easy to do, right? And super cheap.
All right.
Super cheap seeds.
Right. Yeah. So there's no, you know, I would do, before 2020, I was doing between 100 and 200 events a year. I was like a hamster. Ooh, I got to be there. I really thought I had to be everywhere. And so I was. And luckily I have lots of energy. actually, my favorite part of those shows was the barter at the end of the show. When everyone's folding up and it's like, oh, you don't want to take that home? You want to trade? Let's trade.
Nice.
That is awesome.
That'd be my favorite part, too.
I lost my train. I was going to say something, but oh, well, it's gone. Left my head.
All right. So we've kind of talked a little bit about two of your things that you founded. What is Kathy's Laughter Club?
Ah, thank you. Yes, my favorite thing. It's my favorite thing now because we have a global mental health tsunami. I believe I have world hunger and world peace solved with my three offerings.
Awesome.
No pressure. I, it's okay. What else can I take on? and I don't say that like, you know, with a big ego. Just saying if everybody had worms to manage their scraps and grow a little bit of food, everybody sprouted so they got nutrient-rich food, and then laughing for the health of it. When we're laughing, ever heard the expression, laughter is the best medicine?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Right. So laughter, it's scientifically proven. So for people that need the proof is in the pudding, but there's no pudding. it's scientifically proven. And then my next question is, have you had your daily dose? Dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins. When we're laughing, we're secreting all the happy hormones versus cortisol, adrenaline, epinephrine, the stress chemicals. And in today's world, we're living in this stress pool. We're swimming around in stress. We're like, oh, I'm so busy. Oh, I didn't sleep last night. Oh, you know, running here and there. It's like, well, we're the one that puts all this pressure on ourselves, I believe. I mean, I know there's societal pressures, but we can only control us.
I believe you're absolutely right.
You know, and so people will say to me, so it's laughter yoga that I'm talking about. Laughter yoga was started, we just celebrated our 31st anniversary, started in 1995 by a medical doctor. And his goal is world peace, a medical doctor in India. His goal is world peace. There are clubs in over 120 countries. And I believe it started in 1995 so we could have enough people trained around the world so we could bring this globally when everyone was locked in their house. Even before 2020, Dr. Kateria believed that it needed to be done in person. Like we all thought we needed to do everything in person, but we know now we can do a lot of stuff online and it translates. The energy goes through the screen and so laughter yoga is not doing yoga and laughing. It's not jokes or comedy because jokes are cultural, right? Two people going somewhere. It's probably about those two. It's not funny for them. So it's just laughing as a cardiovascular workout, laughing for the health of it. And although the happy hormones and all the connection, all the things are important, I think the most important piece for laughter is the oxygen. When we're stressed, blood lymph oxygen leaves our frontal lobe and goes into our muscles so we can escape the situation, even if we're escaping from our mind. And so when we're laughing, and our brain requires 25% more oxygen than the rest of our body as an operating principle. So when we're laughing, we're exhaling, ha 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 ha. We can't keep on ha 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 ha-ing without going, taking a nice deep breath in. So we can continue laughing at whatever we were laughing at. Although there are breathing exercises as too, we'll say, okay, breathe in, hold it, smiling, whatever, and then exhale. We really don't need to do that because we're already doing the deep breathing when we're laughing because we got to go. And our diaphragm is attached to all of our organs. So when we are deep breathing and laughing, it's like internal jogging, our diaphragm's moving all of our organs. It's just this potent medicine that we've forgotten about.
So it's wow. It's kind of an extension on the concept of breath work, essentially.
It is. Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty awesome. So I guess that for a new person, that must feel a little awkward.
Oh, right? Awkward. So weird. Oh, yes, indeed. It's very awkward. That's why, you know, I say to people, if it's your first time, plan to come twice because the first time could be weird, especially in person, like, especially for the logical people. So there are little games to inspire the laughter. And there's clapping. So we're clapping palm to palm. And the rhythm is 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. The words are ho, ho, ha, ha, ha. And when I came to laughter yoga, thank you. When I came to laughter yoga, I was like, oh, what is this? This is so weird. And I now that I'm trained and I've been in it for so many years, I realize this is priming. This helps people that are logical, that are in their head, like, you want me to laugh? What? There's no joke. What is happening? The body doesn't know the difference between real and simulated laughter. Our brain does. The ego does. Like, hey, what's happening? You look ridiculous. Stop that. Because the brain's role is to keep us safe and conserve energy. Mm. It knows what to do. Like, that's why when you have those family functions and your brother or your sibling says something and you're like back in the thing again, the brain's like, oh, I know what to do here. So with laughter, we can kind of bypass that. We can start laughing. Ha, ha, ha. Even if it's simulated or fake. Ha, ha, ha. And because we're smiling, we're making that happy sound, we start secreting those happy chemicals. So we're bypassing our brain, like, I don't know what's happening, but I'm making that happy sound. So pew, 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 we start secreting those hormones. And then we laugh some more. Ha, ha, ha. Pew, pew, pew. Ha, ha, ha. Pew, pew, pew. We're literally in charge of our own pharma. We can secrete the stress hormones or the happy hormones. It's up to us.
That is pretty amazing. I will admit, though, I'm one of those people. If I came into a room of people like that, I'd be like, this is very awkward, uncomfortable, and I'm not sure I like it.
Right. So thank you. I appreciate that, Havoc. I really appreciate that, because that's kind of our society. If we see somebody sad or somebody angry, that's okay. We see that all the time. People shouting or people piping off. If we see people laughing, you know, here's an example. I live in a small town and I ride my bike. I know we can't multitask, but I combine my bike riding with my laughter yoga. Probably part of my branding. I think I'll wear my shirt next time. Well, I always have my shirt on.
Well, that's
really multitasking. I'm a shower too. And one day there was a man with his granddaughter standing on a bridge, and I talked to everybody. So I get off my bike, I start approaching, and I'm also an empath. So as I was approaching, I could feel that he was not happy that I was approaching. So I bid them a nice day. I got back on my bike and continued riding. A couple days later, I was standing on the bridge, and that man came along. He didn't have his granddaughter this time, and we started to talk. And he said, you know, when people see people laughing by themselves, they think there's something wrong with them. And I started laughing. I know it. And then we continued talking. I get on my bike, ride home. It wasn't until I walked into the living room that oh my gosh, he was talking about me.
Right.
I mean, I think I am a little cuckoo, right? I have worms. I have worms, and I've got all these cuckoo things. I'm outside of society for sure, by choice. And it's a magic life. I've created this incredible life, not paying attention to what society wants me to do. And were people always supportive? No, family was the worst. Like they're like, oh, like, cause they want to keep you safe, right? They want you to be successful and have money and all the things. So they're like, what? You're going to, no. No, why don't you just do what you know?
Yeah.
You know, so, but now 20 years in, they're like, oh, we knew you could do it.
No, you didn't.
Sure.
Oh, mm-hmm. Well, I wish you supported me back then. That would be nice to know.
Yeah. No, and it is interesting, right? Because that the story of the man on the bridge is a huge one, because if you think about it, right, I suppose it would be, I would imagine some of this is environmentally, you know, just socially and environmentally taught, right? Where you grew up, how you grew up, you know, what your influences were. But yeah, certainly walking down the street and you know, with a friend or whatever, and you see someone on the other side of the street standing there by themselves laughing. I'm going to avoid that. this doesn't look right. Something wrong over there. I don't think I want to go talk to them.
Right?
You know?
Yeah.
But honestly, I mean, the flip side of that is, I mean, at least that person is happy about something, right? And hey, at the end of the day, you know, not just chemically, but, you know, for your own well-being mentally, right? Better off laughing than rage screaming at whatever is bothering you, you know?
So. Yeah, you know, I would like to say about how I came to laughter. It was 2012, and one more person said, ew, worms in the house, about my worm business. And I was like, that day, I'd heard it hundreds of times in the previous 10 years. Hundreds. I should have kept track. And I wasn't paying attention. You know, they say to listen to what your clients want. I was like, no, you need this. People don't buy what they need. They buy what they want. And they definitely didn't want what I was flogging. And that day in 2012, I heard it. I felt it. I questioned everything. And I was about to doff my important mission. Like, maybe I should get a job. no, this has to work. Don't tell me what to do. I'd be a horrible employee.
Right.
This has to work. And the very next day I was introduced to laughter yoga. I was at a business meeting and the speaker did a 5-minute introduction. I don't do yoga, by the way. I know it's a great thing. It's just not my modality. I jumped right to the fun yoga, like laughing, what? So fun. And then that same week, 2012, I was at a networking event, hundreds of people. The very first woman I met was a laughter yoga teacher. And I,
wow.
Right? I said to her, oh, laughter yoga's mainstream, right? Like twice in 1 week. Come on, I'm the center of the universe. Of course it's of course it's mainstream. And she was like, no, it isn't. I think she got offended. And we trooped around that night. Everybody we met, it said, have you heard of laughter yoga? Have you? Have you? Have you? Never mind my worms that I was trying to flog. And her club happened to be 5-minute walk from where my mother-in-law lived in Toronto. Like Toronto's a massive city. And her club was five minutes from my mother-in-law. And I was like, so fun. I phoned up my mother-in-law and I said, hey, you want to go to laughter yoga? And she said, what's that? And I said, I don't know, but I don't want to go alone. And it became our date night. And we would go out for dinner. She would say, we better not have garlic. And I'm like, no, as long as we both have it. I'm not like her. And so, yeah, so it was so fun. So we would go to laughter yoga and it was a monthly club. So not often enough to get the benefits, but it was fun. We loved it. And then after about 3 or 4 months, she closed her club because there wasn't enough attendance. And her club was at a very busy intersection, Condoville, like 20,000 people must live at that corner. And I was like, oh, they just don't know. We just need 10 people. So I got trained as a leader and I love that so much. I got trained as a teacher. So I teach leaders now. And I was appointed laughter ambassador in 2017 by Dr. Kateria. And I wear that moniker really proudly. And I think before 2012, when I was introduced, when somebody said, ooh, worms in the house, on a certain level, I took it personal. Like, ooh, something about me. Laughter gave me permission to realize, that's not my stuff. They're just not ready yet. They're not my market. They're not ready. That's okay. It's not me. It's the worms. They're not happy with the idea of the worms. And it changed everything for me. And then my husband, I laugh and I say he was laughter hesitant for about 10 years. So I got introduced in 2012. I know it sounds so funny. Before 2020, I was doing Skype laughter with laughter professionals. 20 minutes of laughter, no talking. We just log in. It was audio, not video. And I would be doing my emails laughing, ha ha ha, just practicing different laughs. So we were all just practicing our craft. My husband would leave the room. I'm like, why is he leaving? Like, laughter's the best medicine. Like, what's wrong with him? And then in 2022, we're walking in the forest and I said, I have a training next week and I only have one student and they're paid. So I guess we're going ahead. And he said, maybe I'll take the training.
Nice.
There was never any talk of him taking the training. I was like, what? So it took 10 years for the laughter to get into his DNA. And then I don't know. That's just, you know, he has a different story, but I think my story is better. And now we co-lead Laughter Club together, and it's changed us as a couple. We've been together for 40 years, married 38 this year. Someone should get a prize.
That's awesome.
That's a wonderful thing.
It's so beautiful, and it's made us even closer. Like, we're close already, we're kind of connected at the hip, it's fine. It's just made us really more resilient, I would say. And if we do get into a skirmish, it's very rare, but if we do, we might get into argument, gibberish laughter. So if we start to escalate where you're just in emotion, where you're operating from your reptile brain, okay, no point in having an argument because no one's saying anything valuable and you can't take it back, folks. So then we'll do argument laughter, one hand on your hip, one hand wagging. Right, and then your leopards start laughing. Okay, now let's have an adult conversation. What do we need to talk about?
Well, that's a good way to disarm, like, the anger or you know, fear or whatever else is going on, I think.
Yeah, I'd like the world leaders to have a gibberish argument.
That would be pretty awesome, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see if we can arrange that. I think that would be good.
Televised.
Televised, yes.
Because we all need to see something that silly, I think.
Right. Mm. Yeah. So I absolutely understand your idea, your thoughts that it would be really awkward. I did a laughter gig for a Probus Club. Probus, I don't know if it's Canadian or, but it's professional business people that are retired. So they don't want you to sell them anything. They just want to be educated or entertained. So I was hired to do a laughter gig. So I did some talking about it, blah, 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 blah. And then I said, okay, everyone stand up. We're going to do some laughter yoga. At the end, a woman came up to me and there was 300 people in the audience. So I couldn't see everybody. Like I didn't notice this person, but she came up to me and she said, that was so great. She said, my husband hates interactive stuff, but he didn't know who the speaker was. So he came. And when he said, everybody stand up, he was glaring at me and he was like, had his hands like arms crossed and he didn't play at all. And that's hilarious because laughter is contagious. When we hear laughter, we're primed to it. We want to laugh. But it takes a lot of energy to not even smile. Like if you don't even crack a smile, wow, that's a pretty strong character.
Oh yeah. Very much so.
Like just go along with it. Just try it. And that's, you know, that's what we say as laughter. That's what I say as a laughter yoga teacher. When I do a club or I go, I'm hired to go somewhere. First thing I say is allow yourself permission. Get out of your head and into your body. If you're thinking this is weird, you're in your head. Get in your body and feel it because your body is going to have a party. It's going to be fully oxygenated, all the love drugs careening. And here's a wonderful fact, fun fact about laughter or oxygen. Cancer cannot survive in an oxygen-rich body. Dr. Mm. Otto Warburg won a Nobel Peace Prize for this information. Way back when, I don't know what year it was. I will have that information for the next time.
Awesome. Well, very good. This is, I think, probably a good place to start wrapping up. It's been a really wonderful conversation. And we like to ask our guests one thing. This our only scripted question, and we always prep our guests and let them know it's coming. But throughout our lives, there's an individual, could be a historical figure, an author, sixth grade science teacher, mom, whoever it is, who had a profound impact on our lives. And we like to give our guest a chance to shout out that person.
Yeah, I would say, I would love to give a shout out to Mary Appelhoff. She was a microbiologist in Kalamazoo, Michigan. She wrote a book called Worms Eat My Garbage. And she was like, not my mentor because I only spoke to her on the phone, but because of her wonderful work, she wrote that book in the 80s. And she was shouting from the rooftops for in the 70s, hey, everybody, you can have worms in your kitchen to manage your food scraps. I felt like an alien in 2002 telling people that could have worms inside. So I can only imagine how Mary, like she was a microbiologist, so she might not have cared what other people were thinking or whatever. But, you know, because of Mary, I was able to stay in what I was doing. And I looked to her for not advice, but just, you know, thinking, man, Mary was doing this in the 70s and 80s. So, which gave me 20 years. She was a pioneer 20 years before I even started.
Wow.
Yeah, and she passed in 05. And you know, just a quick story about Mary. In 2005, I mentioned going to Michigan because of an article in BioCycle. When I went there, we stopped in Flint. I don't know why we stopped in Flint, Michigan, where Michael Moore's from. And I asked a couple of people if they'd heard of Mary Appelhoff, and they hadn't. And I was like, man, when you die, you're dead unless someone keeps you alive. And then I realized Michael Moore was from Flint, Michigan. So I set about to, I had this great idea that Michigan could be the worm capital of the world with all those empty GM buildings. all those unemployed people, and Michigan became the trash capital. They have the lowest tipping fees, and the tipping fees at landfill. So Canada exports their garbage to Michigan. The surrounding states send their garbage to Michigan. So I was like, imagine if Michigan used those buildings, used the trash that they're getting anyway as a resource. Wouldn't that be grand? And I tried to get in touch with Michael Moore. He says he answers all his emails. He didn't. His agent wouldn't get the letter to him. But I was at an environmental film festival, and I used to carry around the letter that I had a freelance writer interview me, and she wrote this letter. They were my words, but in her words, if that makes sense. And I would carry around this letter because of the 6 degrees of separation. I was like, Michael Moore comes to TIFF every year, the Toronto Film Festival.
Okay.
So he dated someone. Someone sued him, or someone knows him. And I'm going to find someone that knows him and get this letter to him. So I was at this film festival, and I said to the organizer of the festival, oh, you know, I'm trying to get Michael Moore. Here's a letter that I wrote to Michael Moore. And he read the letter. He called over his partner. He's like, Dave. And he's like, Dave, we should do this movie. And then he's looked at me. He's like, oh, maybe you want Michael Moore to do it. I'm like, he can do the second one. It's called Squirm. I was like, he could do Squirm too.
That's funny.
That is. That's pretty.
So I do have a documentary. It's Canadian documentary. It wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be, but a documentary before everyone was doing video. So how beautiful.
That is awesome.
All right. Where can we watch that?
It's on YouTube. It's called Squirm, or it's on my website as well. It might be easier to find it because Squirm, you find the horror movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I'll definitely watch it for sure.
Yeah. Thank you. Where can people find your work? Where can they find, you know, what you've got going on? Where can they get in touch with you for worms or sprouts or laughter?
Yeah. Wonderful. So I have three websites. Kathy'sComposters.com is worms. Kathy'sSprouters.com is sprouts, and Kathy'sClub.com is laughter. And I was going to have Kathy's Laughter Club, but when you put S in front of laughter, you get slaughter. It's a different, it's a different club.
Hey,
so it's Kathy's Club. And well, if I may, invite you and your listeners to my free online laughter club, I would love it. May I?
Absolutely.
Too late.
I'll give it a shot. Why not? It will be awkward and it will be weird, but I will do it.
Okay. Yeah. It's Tuesday mornings, 9:30 a.m. Eastern, 30 minutes of super fun self-care. I incorporate tapping, brain gym, qigong, just to help people get out of stress and into joy. And in June, we are celebrating 6 years of our global giggle gang.
Awesome. I will have to, I still work for the man, so I will have to take a little bit of time off and mark myself out, but I will find time to do that and see what it's
so
all
Tuesdays
about.
At 9:30 a.m. Eastern time?
Yes.
Okay.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you very much for giving us thank you very much for giving us a little bit of your time today. We really appreciate it. And it's been a wonderful,
thank you.
Wonderful episode. Anything you wanted to follow up on, Alex?
I got a very good education and I really, really enjoyed this episode.
Oh. Me too. And I wanted to say space tomatoes. You know, I end my presentations with that I saw the Canadian astronaut, Dr. Robert Thirsk, speak, and he spoke about the Mars exploration. He said a trip to Mars 3 years. And I would say, wow, people in the audience were like, oh my gosh, how do you not have enough air to breathe or water to drink? He said, water and air we have covered. It's food. How do we grow enough food? How do we bring enough food to feed our crew for a return trip? So I say, I used to end my presentation with, it's not rocket science. It's earth science. And now it's rocket science too. And so they are growing space tomatoes.
Oh, yeah. No, nice. Absolutely. I actually did study up on some of that. And I thought it's a really interesting thing. Because without gravity, so much changes, right? I mean, much changes. So, yeah, awesome. All right. Well, thank you again for coming on. We really appreciate your time. And thank you for giving us a little bit of your time again. You know where to find us. We're everywhere. We are now on Fountain.fm as our primary host. So if you care to, go check us out there. It's a podcast 2.0 setup. So you can recognize value if you feel that we gave you some value. And do a microtransaction if you cared to. Otherwise, leave a thumbs up if you liked us. Thumbs down if you didn't. Leave a comment. Tell us we suck. Tell us we were great. We don't care. And if you have an idea for a guest or a topic for the show, leave a comment. We will get back to you. Promise. We respond to every single comment out there.
Not like Michael Moore.
Right? Not like Michael Moore. And remember, wherever you are, whenever you're watching this, have an amazing day.
See you, everybody.